you write after back. That.
Robert, let me just say what you write. You write after that. You go, okay. It was hard to take all this in, not knowing much about Indian astrology. Natty readings sounded a bit contrived to me, but I kept my opinion to myself. I was quite skeptical about astrology and palm readings. Later, I would discover that the whole Indian culture is steeped in this kind of thing. Nothing is done without consulting an astrologer. That's what you write.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, go into your personal memories of your experience of that.
I thought, you know, either he's, you know, setting up a projection, you know, or he wants to tell us how great he is or something or other, you know, that's going on here. This is a fact. It's true, you know.
Right, you mean you didn't know whether the writing was true or not, whether it was a real document.
I didn't know. I have no way of knowing, you know.
Yeah, you write here, UG was straightforward and seemed not to be trying to impress us with the story. He said that as a boy, he spent his summers away from the heat of Chennai. What is Chennai called originally or now? Or where Chennai?
Madras. It was called Madras.
Oh, okay, Madras. He said that as a boy, he spent his summers away from the heat of Madras by going to the Himalayas. He studied yoga under Swami Sivananda. He spent long hours practicing all kinds of disciplines. Eventually, he rejected the practices of yoga and meditation. Quote from him, "The whole thing is a projection of the mind and has no significance at all. I returned to Madras and finished my education, but I was not interested in what my teachers had to say. Indian philosophy and the Hindu religious myths were of no interest to me." Now, this would be maybe in the 50s or something, right? In his life.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, years before your encounter.
Oh, no, before that.
Even the 40s.
Because he met Ramana Maharshi, and I guess Maharshi died, I'm not sure when he died, but he met him before he died anyway, the South Indian saint.
Right, so, it says here, Indian philosophy and the Hindu religious myths were of no interest to me. The whole idea of spirituality was finished for me. One day, some friends wanted to take me to meet one of India's famous and real sages. I went along and met Ramana Maharshi at his ashram. I asked him if he could give me what he had, and his answer was, quote, "Yes, but can you take it?" unquote. UG said that response simply astounded him. How could he have the nerve to give that traditional answer, meaning Maharshi, which meant, quote, "No, you're not ready. You have to work harder. Perhaps you will attain it in your next life. You're not doing enough now," unquote. Yeah. That ended UG's interest in gurus and the Indian tradition and the Indian traditional approach. He returned to Madras. Now, is it later he goes and gets involved with Theosophical people in England?
Yeah. Well, see, you see, UG's grandfather was involved with the Theosophical Society. He knew Annie Besant, Leadbeater, and all the people that were the heads of, I think he even knew Blavatsky. Anyway, so UG grew up in all this Theosophical atmosphere that his grandfather provided. And so,
but that would mean that the grandfather knew the young Jiddu Krishnamurti, JK.
Yeah.
UG would have seen, would have been very young when he first encountered JK.
Right.
Through his grandfather.
Yeah. So, UG was connected with the Theosophical Society and lectured for them. He was one of their lecturers in India and abroad. And so then, eventually, he said, I think it was he was in Brussels, and some lady asked him during the question period, "Do roses reincarnate?" He said, "That did it for me completely."
In what sense? It did what?
It did it. Finished me. He said, "My Theosophical days were over."
I mean, he thought it was such a stupid question?
Yeah, yeah.
He said, you know, I'm looking up Maharshi. He dies in 1950.
Yeah, okay.
Now, is he the guy who started...
Before,
Is Maharshi the guy that started all this, or is that the who's the guy that starts this whole Indian myth of gurus in the 1800s? Who was like an uneducated guy? Is that this guy or another guy?
No, he was uneducated. Sri Ramana Maharshi was his name. There were two.
But who's
great
the guy that the Vedanta? Who's the one that the Vedanta was inspired by?
Ramakrishna.
Oh, okay. So this guy,
Ramakrishna. Ramakrishna
right,
was an uneducated Brahmin priest in the Kali temple in Calcutta, which is still there today. He initiated 12 boys or something and or more into Swamihood. And Vivekananda was one of them who became kind of the spokesman for Vedantic thought in India and in the turn of the century. So Vivekananda, Ramakrishna Vivekananda, were the modern, you know, heroes of Indian culture. Ramana Maharshi was one of the greatest living sages, they claim.
Out of that tradition? He came out of that thread, that string of people?
No, out of his own background, South Indian background. See, Vedanta is everywhere in India. It's a system of thinking. It's a philosophy. Vedantic philosophy. And it springs from the Vedas, which are the writings of the mystics of India that wrote them thousands of years ago in the north of India. So, Ramana Maharshi was one of the great, he's considered to be, if anyone is genuine, okay, he's considered to be a genuine sage, enlightened man.
Right, whereas the other guy was promoted by British culture and became the tourist culture myth.
Who?
The uneducated one.
No. Eventually he died, and Vivekananda made him famous and founded the Ramakrishna missions all over India and the world.
All right, It's Vivekananda who creates the myth of Egypt, of India for the Westerners, right?
Yeah, one of them.
Yeah.
The Theosophical Society had a part to play by introducing Buddhism, Hinduism to the West through its Theosophical teachings. And later, J. Krishnamurti was an exponent of the Theosophical lore. And the other source was the Ramakrishna Vedanta temples, which sprang up all over the world and in India. Those are the two main sources.
Right. But Vivekananda was not involved with the Theosophical Society.
No.
Right. And then you have this third guy, Ramana Maharshi, who he creates another does he go around travel?
No. No, he stayed in his ashram all his life. He never ventured out of it. When he was very young, young boy, he had a number of experiences where he would faint and experience the near-death experiences. And he never came out of this experience altogether. He remained in that state, that union, with this over soul, Paul Brunton called it. Paul Brunton was a disciple of Ramana Maharshi, and Paul Brunton made him very famous through his books on India, Secret Search in Egypt, Secret Search in India. He wrote umpteen books about Ramana Maharshi teachings. So it was Paul Brunton and Maurice Friedman, he was a foreigner, lived in India, that made Ramana Maharshi famous.
Okay,
so today all the present would-be gurus are all saying that they trace their lineage back to Maharshi, which is all just bogus.
And they pick Maharshi over Vivekananda?
Yeah. Easier.
Yeah, because looking in your book, Swami Agahananda, he gets involved with the Ramakrishna Vivekananda thread or stream.
Right.
That's where he begins. Yeah. All right. So he rejected it.
He rejected the morality of the Ramakrishna mission. He claimed that Ramakrishna never taught any morals, and if one reads the Bengali version of the Great Master, which is the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, written by Bengali, one of the disciples, they find out that he was foul-mouthed. He used cuss words, swear words. He was reported to be gay. He was in love with his disciples. He smoked hash. He did everything. He was anything but moral. We're talking about Ramakrishna.
Right.
Yeah.
And that leads into Vivekananda.
Vivekananda said that Ramakrishna was anything but moral. But when the swamis that he was studying under started talking about morality, Agananda rejected that completely. And that's why he left. He left the mission. He wasn't yet a swami. He was a student.
Right.
You know, studying.
And well, what's interesting for me... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
What's interesting for me is that you've got Swami Agananda, who is a big explainer of this, the truth of these traditions in the West in the 60s and 70s, but you have this other thread coming out of Ramana Maharshi, which Yuji exposes. So that Agananda...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, Agananda is the one who clarifies the real roots of the Indian myth to you and Dave Worster, and then like 7-8 years later, you meet Yuji, who clarifies and puts down the Ramana Maharshi theme.
Well, Agananda was an exponent of Indian lore, Indian philosophy. He knew it in and out, forwards and backwards. He spoke, you know, the local languages, 17 languages. He was a Sanskrit scholar. He knew what he was talking about.
Yeah.
He read the original text, not the washed out versions, hand-me-down versions that ended up, you know, in bookshelves in America and Europe. So he clarified and said what the real bona fide teachings are, which, you know, Americans can't follow. They can't become Hindus, Indians.
Yeah.
So forget it. And even Agananda, although he could follow the rituals, the language, the system, he didn't really believe that what they said was true. He said to them it was true, but he said it was like a fairy tale, but I like the fairy tale. I get enjoyment from it, he says.
Yeah. He's detached.
I enjoy these experiences.
Right. He's an outsider, a European who's well-versed in the culture and detached. But Yuji grows out of the other stream, coming out of Ramana Maharshi, and he becomes detached.
Well, he didn't come out of Maharshi. He came out of the theosophical background.
Oh, right.
Which is a version of Hinduism that was a blending of Buddhist, Christian, and Hindu ideas that Annie Besant and Charles Leadbeater and Madame Blavatsky and the other theosophical teachers created. They created a theosophical system of ideas. But when you looked upon by scholars, they say, "Oh, it's just a mixture of Buddhist and Christian and Hindu ideas."
Right now,
that's their opinion, of course, and it's my opinion too. That's what they are.
It says here on page 110 that UG study yoga under Swami Shivananda. Is that the Maharshi thread? Maharshi?
No. He's just a pure follower of the Indian system of thought, Vedanta.
Right, but we just didn't. I looked up Maharshi because I think, no, he goes and encounters Ramana Maharshi as his last guy. And when he gets that answer...
Some friends took him there.
Right.
And he was sort of reluctant to go, but he went anyway. And when Maharshi answered his question, can I get what you have? He said, yes, I can give it to you, but can you take it? And that ended Yuji's interest in gurus, philosophy, systems that were traditional in India.
Yeah, and that ended his...
But Krishnamurti was still in the background of Yuji's own theosophical background. He knew of Krishnamurti. He had seen and met him as a boy, knew of his teachings. To what extent, he didn't say, but he was he knew Krishnamurti. And later, Yuji spent months listening to J.K. in India and had long conversations with him, private conversations.
Let me just say this. So that Yuji gets disillusioned with the guru. I mean, he heard the Krishnamurti and the theosophical stuff when he was young, but he studies under Shivananda, and then he leaves that. Then he goes one more guy, Ramana Maharshi. That ends his interest in gurus. But what's interesting, he then now can hear and understand Krishnamurti, because Krishnamurti is the only guru saying that's all crap. And so he still had to deal with that.
He had to deal with a man saying that the other gurus are false.
Yeah, because he agreed with that. He agreed with the guru thing at that point. And if you're saying he meant...
I don't like to use the word agreed. I mean, that was what was there, you know.
Yeah, he had come to that same realization of the limitation. Now, if Maharshi dies in 1950, then this is in the 40s, and that means Yuji's in his 30s, and he says he goes and gets married, so he's probably doing that in the
40s. He was married earlier before the Ramana Maharshi encounter.
Well, did you ever meet his three children?
Two of them.
Okay, can you get an idea of when they were born, thinking back?
Well, one of them was born in Chicago when Yuji was in Chicago. That would be in the 50s, 1950s.
So that kid would be in the 50s now?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He lives in New York. And he has two daughters who live in Hyderabad. They're both retired. And he has another son who died when he was in his early 30s or late 20s in Bombay.
Right. He discusses trying to get treatments with even J.K. for the kid.
Before he died, they lived in Chicago. He had polio.
Yeah, he said in the end, J.K. did give the son some esoteric healing, but there was no real improvement. So Yuji packed up with his wife and son, went off to America. Vasant did improve with proper braces and the then current medical treatment. Yuji's fourth child, a son, was born in the U.S. and named him Kumar. Isn't that the name of your friend?
Yeah.
Kumar. Yeah, that's interesting. Same name. Right?
Kunal.
Oh, it's Kunal. Okay. All right.
Kumar is a really popular name. It's like Joe or
Joe the plumber. Joe the plumber, and it's Kumar the cook or something, right?
Yeah.
What would be in India? What would be the common job in India?
Well, his name now is Mark. He changed it from Kumar to Mark.
And M-A-R-K is in Kumar. The letters are in Kumar.
Yeah.
Mark.
Yeah.
Okay, so the interesting thing is we're in the 50s, Yuji is They said there were some storm clouds gathering in Chicago. A process of detachment from family and friends was beginning with Yuji, and at some point he sent his wife and four children back to India with what money was left from his inheritance. He then went to New York and later landed in London without money or friends. He managed to live somehow. With no hope or a place to stay, he finally showed up on the doorstep of the Ramakrishna Vedanta Society. Now, that's the world that he had been part of. That's the other stream.
Right. But he knew it in and out.
Right.
Every Indian's boy, or, you know, who's been tutored at all, is versed in all this Indian lore. It's in the bones, in the blood.
Okay, so they offered him shelter. In exchange for his stay, he edited some of their periodicals. So he didn't believe in the content, but he was managing the medium of periodicals. He put out the medium, but he didn't believe in the content, right?
And he caused some problems there.
He started arguing.
He was questioning their ideas.
Right, and if you actually do this, he's older than you by 10 years, but he's going through the Krishnamurti effect in the 50s the same time you are. That's what's interesting here.
Yeah. I think we've jumped way ahead because we were talking about being in sanna in there.
Right. Well, we're just developing Yuji. We've never really fully developed him. And now for the listeners, it's good that we give a bit of what's happening. Look, he goes just to follow that story, just because we're leading up to 66. And let me just show you what you say here. He edits the periodicals. By that time, Yuji observed, looking back at his life, there had been a deep change in him. The whole sexual urge had gone out of his system. Yuji said, with it, quote, with it, the wife and family. I could no longer be a part of that relationship anymore. It was finished for me. After he finished his work at the Vedanta Society, with what money he had, he went to Switzerland, and there he met Valentine, who came to his aid. Now, that's probably in the, let's say, the late 50s. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Eventually, they moved to Sanin, where they had been staying for some years. I mean, they'd been in Sanin for like 10 years when you meet them.
Yeah.
And what had he? But what do you think? She had the money, so he lived off her, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yuji described Valentine as a remarkable woman who shared what money she had without wanting anything in return. And then in the book, you go into the story of seeing Yuji and Krishnamurti meeting in the rainy night or something. Remember that?
Yep.
Tell us about that.
One afternoon, Connie, Douglas, there was a girl from Rome. She was an Australian. And Phil Dia, when we were at her, Phil Dia was a rich girl, lady, who had a flat in Sanin near the road. And we were up to her place having lunch, I think. And it was raining very heavily. It rains a lot in Switzerland. And looking out the window, I saw Yuji walking along the road, and JK was in his Mercedes sports car coming along and stopping. And I just saw that Yuji was talking to JK, and I had no idea what they were talking about. And then the car drove off and left Yuji standing there in the rain. So I just observed it looking out the window. Well, the next time I saw Yuji or something, I thought I'd play a trick on him, because he was always playing tricks on us, using his clairvoyant powers to say something or do something. And I said, you know, why did you not get in the car with JK the other day when it was raining? And he looked at me and said, "How do you know?" he said. I have my powers, you know. Something like that. And he, for a moment, I had him. Then when I saw that I had him, I said, no, I saw you out the window. So then he said, the chap came by in his car and offered me a ride. And I said, no, I'd rather walk. And Krishnamurti said to him, "Suit yourself," and drove off. They had a very strange relationship. You know?
Yeah, because Krishnamurti is dealing with a kid who grew up in the early years of the school. He's like a special early student of Krishnamurti through the grandfather. Yeah. You know, I mean, he's like a close family member. They're all like almost family.
Yeah, let me tell you something, Bob, if I can here. I expressed something. Hope I can get it straight here. supposing what Yuji has said, and I'm just quoting him, that in this state that he's in, you have no relationship whatsoever to anyone. You're no longer a father, a son, a brother, a friend to anyone. You have no relationship. Because you don't have any use for that person. You can't use that person for anything, to gain anything. So if JK is in that state, then he also has this sense of being separated from everyone, that he's not connected to them in any way, in a personal way where he's has a relationship. There isn't any relationship at all. So it's like you're dead to the world, to other people. So that was a demonstration, I think, of JK's honesty there, that, okay, suit yourself, you know.
Yeah.
But in other words, he well knew that Yuji quite well. They spent hours together talking. He knew him well. He knew of his inclination, his mystical inclination, his experiences. But at the same time, he would never acknowledge it.
Right.
In the same way, Yuji, when someone dragged someone who was supposed to be enlightened to see him, Yuji looked upon him as just looking at a dog or something, or a piece of furniture. It didn't mean anything. There was no importance to it. Okay, so he's lightened. So what? What are you going to get out of it? Nothing. Forget it. You know? But
right,
most
now,
people, we live in the illusion. Oh, the great man. Oh, I can get something from the great man. I can get some diksha, some help, you know. So, in this case, no. When Yuji said goodbye to me, you know, when he was leaving to go get on a plane at the airport, I used to feel that nobody was there. Just a shell was there, standing there, empty.
Yes.
And he said goodbye, didn't he? I said, goodbye, Yuji, goodbye. And looked at me as if I didn't exist. What goodbye? And only out of his Victorian courtesy, he would say goodbye.
But, well, what's interesting...
That's a footnote to enlighten.
Yeah, but the parallel process, bigger than individual states of being, is the interconnectedness of life. And the fact is, that's the most important meeting in your life, and you happen to see, you're privileged to see quickly what was going on between them two, so that you went and heard Krishnamurti, but the real lesson of being with Krishnamurti that summer was to interface with a guy who was detached from Krishnamurti. That was the real.
Yeah, I remember walking out of the tent one day and saying, Jesus, damn it, what's going on here? You know, it really blew me out. I have spent a whole sleepless night that night, you know, saying, why am I here? Why am I listening to this guy? What's going on? And it took 12 years later to meet Yuji and to find out, you know, to discover that you have to put the guru aside, down. There's a tradition in India, Yuji says, you have to kill the guru.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see the Buddha, if you see the Buddha on the road, kill him.
Kill that bastard.
That's right. And part of the thing, you're looking at these so-called spiritual people, and they're looking at you like a godfather, like they could crush you like a bug, that kind of detachment. They didn't even care about you.
No.
And you're projecting all this warmth into them.
They don't give it. They have a deep caring for you, sir. This is the mystery of it all. That I never felt such a sense of affection and love from any other person as much as from Yuji.
Right, so he's not like a mafia guy. You probably wouldn't feel that from a mafia guy unless you were in the town and controlled by the guy. Yeah,
unless
well, that's the paradox.
The paradox is there. But at the same time, the detachment from it.
Yeah.
Utter detachment.
Well, probably the detachment is necessary to allow the chi love to come to me, to be emitted from you. It's actually you're letting the spirit come through you. Now, you wouldn't maybe agree with the words, but there's something that's coming through. Maybe if you're just like an animal, like you're like dogs, and you just feel something for each other. But it cannot be expressed verbally, and no contracts come out of it.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
The camaraderie ship or something.
Yeah.
No, I know. It's strange. It's a dichotomy there, you know. It's just really, really strange. Anyway, that was...
Wait a minute. I have a question. When you said you were coming out of the tent and confused by Krishnamurti, were you trying to process Yuji's statements about Krishnamurti, or you just were bothered by Krishnamurti?
Trying to process JK. What the hell is he? What is he? What he said blew me out. He said, this sort of a thing has only happened perhaps to one or two in the history of mankind.
That's a big statement.
Yeah. I thought, what's he say? Hey, what's he saying?
Yeah.
This has only happened once or twice?
He's that special.
Hey,
he's that special.
But what about the others? You know? what about me? I haven't got a chance.
Krishnamurti is such an expert. He knows there's only one or two of them that made the short list, and he's one of them. I mean, that's megalomania.
Yeah, super.
Yeah.
Super. So, maybe one or two. So that, then what about the others, you know? So, in one sense, it's a very good tonic, a good medicine to take.
Yeah.
Because it really makes you take a look at what do I know? Well, one time, Valentine was interrupting Yuji, interrupting him conversation. And he looked at her and said, what do you have to say? Anything at all? And that shut her up. She never said a thing after that.
Ever again.
Never again did she ever give any advice.
Well, then you witnessed the transformation in her, at least her relationship with him.
Yeah.
Well, what year was that? When did that happen?
Oh, that was after his so-called enlightenment, you know.
Yeah, which is a year after the time we're talking about.
He couldn't make that statement before, you know.
That's right. You want to bring in Douglas was supposedly there when he transformed, right?
Afterwards. He was in Sanan, yeah, but not with him.
And then he saw him like a few days later or something.
Yeah. He says he was very different.
So Douglas was the first of your circle to experience the new Yuji.
Yeah. Yeah. But Valentine was there.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah. She was the first person.
Yes.
Yeah.
But of these three musketeers, Connie, Bob, and Douglas.
Three musketeers, yeah.
Douglas stays there and is there for the next year or so and is around him when he's changed.
Not a year. Douglas would spend his summers there because he was learning yoga in Madras, and he was there for the summer.
And he would go to see Krishnamurti? He would go to see Krishnamurti in the summer?
He would go to sauna and would go to hang out with Yuji and spend his time there.
More than Krishnamurti. More than Krishnamurti. More than Jiddu. JK. Like Douglas?
I don't know the length of time, whether it was a month or less. You can't stay there too long. It's expensive. He would go there to beat some of the heat in
Madras.
In India, it was too hot. The temperature is, humidity is just unbelievable.
Right, but is he friend enough of Yuji that he can crash at the chalet?
He doesn't crash there, no.
Okay, so he has his own way of. But he was in 67. Would he still be going over to the Krishnamurti tent?
No. Krishnamurti was there for like a good month, and then he would be gone, Jay Krishnamurti. So he talked for a month and gave his talks, and then he was gone then.
Yeah, but what, so was Douglas interested?
Douglas got married. Huh?
Was Douglas married. Interested? Let me say this. Was Douglas interested in Krishnamurti the following summer of 67? Interested in JK?
Oh, yeah, sure.
But he hung out because he could hang out with Yuji.
Yeah, because he was a friend of Yuji, yeah.
Yeah, and Yuji you could hang out with. You couldn't hang out with JK.
No. You had to be rich.
And he got married the next 67 period, 67, 68?
I don't know when he got married, but he married a girl who was also studying yoga.
Okay. All right, so here's this experience with Krishnamurti. We may be wanting to wrap this up, but we've been doing about an hour and a half. How do you feel?
I feel like maybe I'm losing my zap. So
okay, so the point is, you've had this amazing encounter with this Yuji, and what happens is that you do manage to connect with with the JK gang, and they tell you to go to Rishi Valley, right? That was how did that happen?
Well, very, very briefly, Yuji engineered Connie and I to drive Douglas up to the chalet to try and meet JK, because Yuji said if you meet him, it'll be the most important meeting in your life.
Okay.
He's like a dynamo. So we drove Douglas up there, Yuji, Connie, and I, and Douglas. And Douglas rang the bell at the chalet, and some lady came to the door, and Douglas said, I want to see Jay Krishnamurti. And finally he came to the door, and he said to Douglas, oh, thank you for coming. Nice of you to come, but I can't see you. If you want to see me, you should come to India. I can see you there. It's much easier. I have more time. So from that, I ascertained if I want to see JK, then I better go to India. So Douglas and I and Connie made a pact. We would all meet in India.
Right, and you're standing there in the doorway while Douglas is talking.
No, I'm in the car. I'm in the car.
In the car. And then Douglas reports to you what was said.
Yeah.
And you did not know that. You wouldn't have known that unless you'd gone to Shelley, that you could have gone to the Rishi Valley.
Right. That was my plan.
Oh, you knew you could do that before this conversation with Douglas?
Yeah, because I had read all the literature, and people, you know, went to Rishi Valley and had interviews with him in both in Rishi Valley and Chennai and Rajghat in Banaras. So I knew that the chances were much better. It was common knowledge, shall I say.
Right, so you knew you were going to India, what was good is you had that personal connection with him pretty close about him telling you guys to come.
Yeah, right.
Or at least Douglas.
So we can say that, the next big jump is when we land in India and we meet Douglas and Kim and eventually we come we meet J.K. and spend a month with him in Rishi Valley. Okay?
Do you, right, but do you forget about UG, or does he haunt you for the next 12 years?
No, it doesn't haunt me. I just remember meeting him and liking him, but having no mystical expectations or anything, you know.
Well, how soon after his transformation in 67 did Douglas tell you about the change in UG?
1970.
Years later.
71. Yeah. 70 or 71 it was, in San Francisco. Douglas had come to live in San Francisco after India and started to teach yoga. And I used to go see him to learn some exercises. And my girlfriend Cindy, it was there to get some help because she had been in an bad accident when she was younger and was impaired. And I saw a photo of Yuji on Douglas's table in Douglas's room. And I said, "Oh, Yuji." And he said, "Oh, yeah, Yuji." He said, "Yeah, he had some kind of mystical experience." That's all he said. I'll go into it later.
Oh, that's really great. And so the point is that you were sort of out of touch with Douglas when you were up in Seattle, but when you got back to San Francisco, you reconnected with him, it sounds like.
Right.
Okay, that's really good, Bob. That's an important transition period from 66 to 70, so that's really good what we got down on tape.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right. Now I've got some rajma, which is an Indian dish that my cook made this morning, and some pulao rice. And I'm going to have my lunch with a chapati, okay?
So we will meet in 22 hours.
Right. Tomorrow.
Yeah. Tomorrow morning, 11 o'clock, okay. Your time.
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
Okay.
Bye-bye, Scott. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Bob.
Bye, Robert.
Bye-bye.